Hello, welcome to our program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today I would like to begin our program with an article which appeared in the Wall Street Journal on the 4th of August. The title is, It's a Tough Job Market for New College Graduates. Is an advanced degree worth it? This article was written for the journal by Carla Freed. The temptation for young adults today is great as they struggle to find jobs. The key is to do the numbers. The current job market is making a good case for recent college graduates to consider going to graduate school. But is it really worth it? Uncertainty around the potential impact of higher United States tariffs is tamping down hiring these days. And even before tariff stress hit the job market, new college graduates faced headwinds. The unemployment rate for recent graduates, those ages 22 to 27, was 4.8% in May, the latest data available for that age group, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. That was up from 4.3% in May of 2023. The overall unemployment rate, meanwhile, rose to 4% from 3.5% during the same period. The overall employment rate now is at 4.2% for July. Add to that the growing debate over whether or not artificial intelligence might eat a chunk of entry-level white-collar jobs, and tacking on an advanced degree seems like a sound competitive strategy. The Georgetown University Center on Education and the Workforce projects that the number of jobs requiring graduate degrees will be 14% higher in 2031 than it was in 2021. The question, though, is, will the potential for improved employment prospects and higher long-term earnings outweigh the cost of obtaining a graduate degree, even if you have to take on debt to pay for it? The answer, of course, depends on the degree you're pursuing and how much of a salary boost you can expect from it, and also how much of a burden your total debt load would be. It is totally valid to go to graduate school when the job market is not great, because we know that it does make a difference when you enter the labor force, says Artem Gulish, who is a senior federal policy advisor at Georgetown's Education and the Workforce Center. But you still have to exercise due diligence that is going to be beneficial and not just a way to stay out of the labor market. Earnings premium, but there isn't a learning earnings premium that typically comes with a graduate degree. 18% on the average for someone with a master's degree compared with someone with just a bachelor's degree, according to the Georgetown Center, and more than 60% for medical, law, and doctoral degrees. The problem is the earnings premium has pretty much stayed around 18% over the past 30 years, while medium borrowing for graduate school has increased by nearly 50% in inflation-adjusted 2022 dollars between 2000 and 2020 alone, according to the Georgetown Center. That means that if you intend to take out loans to pay for graduate school, more of any additional earnings are likely to be eaten up by debit repayments. So, where should students draw the line on their borrowing? The Georgetown Center recommends that student loan repayments should be no more than 10% of discretionary income to make it possible for the borrowers to juggle debt repayment with current living costs and savings goals. But that may be a tough mark to hit. While only a minority of graduate programs report detailed earnings and debt information to the Federal College Scorecard database, the Georgetown Center found that among those programs that did report, 41% of master's degree programs and 67% of professional degree programs, such as doctor, dentist, and lawyer, sent graduates out into the job market with repayment burdens above the 10% benchmark. Students today are feeling the pain. In a 2023 survey of 1,000 graduate students by the Third Way think tank, nearly half of the borrowers said that their final borrowing tab was more than they had expected going in, and more than half said that it was going to take more time to repay those loans than they had expected. On the earnings side, however, nearly 75% of respondents said the prospect of earning more was a major motivation for going on to graduate school. But among those who did graduate, less than half felt their school did a good job in helping them towards that goal. Changes to federal loans. Another factor to consider is the changes to the federal college loan system under the tax and spending bill recently signed into law by President Trump. The new rules, which take effect July 1st, 2026, next year, limit the amount that students can borrow from the government for graduate school: $100,000 for master's degrees, $200,000 for the professional degrees. Eliminating the popular Grad Plus program that had allowed loans for the full cost of a graduate degree. They also impose a combined lifetime limit for all federal undergraduate, graduate, and professional loans, and cap the amount parents can borrow for their children. And the sole income-driven repayment plan is less generous than prior options. Mark Kantrowitz, an expert on student financing today, says the new borrowing limits mean that many prospective doctors, dentists, and lawyers may need private loans to help pay for their degrees. Some master's degree students who attend high-cost programs also may need to borrow more than they can from the government. Private loans require either a strong credit score or a cosigner, and the repayment terms generally are far stricter. They also often have higher interest rates, and, says Ann Garcia, a certified financial planner in Portland, Oregon, the new limits on federal graduate loans mean less competition for private lenders, which could drive up the interest rates on many private loans. The debt you already have. Some young adults also do not fully take into account the cost of their existing undergraduate debt when they go about thinking about graduate school. Payments on federal undergraduate loans generally can be deferred while the borrower is in graduate school, or at least half time. But if the undergrad loan was unsubsidized, interest continues to build. Some private lenders offer this type of deferment, but interest usually also continues to build in those cases. You left undergrad with $27,000 in student loans, Garcia says, and in grad school, that same debt grows to $41,000 because interest accrues, and that's on top of what you're borrowing for grad school. Kantrowitz suggests limiting loan total borrowing, undergraduate and graduate, to no more than what you can expect to earn your first year working. To get an idea of what that will be, you can search employment sites including salary.com and payscale.com, which provide general salary ranges today. But you also can check if a graduate program reports median earnings and debt for graduates to the Federal College Scorecard database. If you're pursuing an advanced degree that you expect to qualify for public service loan forgiveness, borrowing more may be okay, Kantrowitz says. But he cautions that an executive order signed in March aims to limit the types of businesses and organizations whose employees would qualify for public service loan forgiveness. The Education Department is working out rules. New Orleans certified financial planner Ryan Frelick says in a common mistake he sees with clients who took on a burdensome amount of debt is that they tended to make the grad decision first and then how to pay for it later on, as though there are two separate decisions. He suggests moving the repayment question into the decision process. It is not a should I go to grad school question, he says. It's a should I go to this grad school if I have to repay X dollars. The next article that I would like to read for you today has a little bit more positive note than the previous article did. This article was taken from the Wall Street Journal the 28th of August, and the title is Artificial Intelligence Workers in Their 20s Rake in High Salaries. This article was written for the journal by Catherine Bindley. It is a tough time to be a young person out there looking for a job unless you're in artificial intelligence. The job market for entry-level workers is in a continued slump. The unemployment rate for new college graduates was 4.8% in June, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, compared with 4% for all workers. While artificial intelligence is part of the reason for the doldrums, there is a bright spot when it comes to workers with actual experience in machine learning. They're in their early 20s. They have AI know-how, and a bunch of them are making $1 million a year. Base salaries for non-managerial workers in artificial intelligence with 0 to 3 years experience out there grew by around 12% from 2024 to 2025, the largest gain of any experience group, according to a new report out by the AI staffing firm Birch Works, which analyzed the compensation of thousands of artificial intelligence and data science candidates. The report also found that people with AI experience are being promoted to management roles roughly twice as fast as their counterparts in other technology fields are. They're jumping the ladder as a result of their skills and impact instead of their years on the job. There is a significant salary difference between a machine learning engineer job and a software engineer job, said Anil K. Gupta, a professor at the University of Maryland's Robert H. Smith School of Business and co-lead of its AI job tracker. Databricks, the data and analytics software company, whose value has skyrocketed during the AI boom, plans to triple the number of people it hires right out of school this year, in part because of their familiarity with artificial intelligence. They're going to come in and they're going to be all AI native, said Ali Goetze, the company's chief executive. We can't for the life of us get the more senior people to adopt it. A generative artificial intelligence research scientist with as little as 2 years of experience can make base salaries today between $190,000 and $260,000 at Databricks, according to the company's job postings page. Including stock grants, the overall compensation can be much higher. We definitely have people, quite junior people, who have big impact and they're getting paid a lot of money, Goetze says. Under age 25, you can be making $1 million. Even in the marketplace for people with AI experience, there is a bifurcation, said Jerry Leskovec, a professor of computer science at Stanford University and co-founder of the startup Kumo AI. He sees PhD students in their early 20s produce effective research, leave their programs early, and get snatched up by companies with large offers before they have any industry experience. The number of zeros is quite large, he said. Then there are those adept at using artificial intelligence. They learn fast, they think fast, and they are able to leverage the technology to be more effective. Though they don't have the advanced degrees, the gap between them and conventional programmers is widening, he said. It's almost like a next generation of a software engineer, he said. Many jobs for machine learning engineers that require 0 to a year of experience pay upward of $200,000 a year at companies such as Roblox, according to levels.fyi. The compensation data provider has seen 42 user-submitted offers of over $1 million from AI companies. Of those, 9 candidates had less than a decade of corporate workplace experience, though some might have had PhDs. At Scale AI, which recently underwent a reverse acquire deal with Meta Platforms, around 15% of employees are under the age of 25. Right out of school, employees at Scale AI can expect base salaries of around $200,000 a year. We are eager to hire artificial intelligence native professionals, and many of those candidates are early in their careers, says Ashi Shiftan, Scale AI's head of people. The company has gone as far as to threaten legal action against firms trying to poach their youngest talent. Lily Ma, after graduating in December with an AI concentration computer science major from Carnegie Mellon University, applied for 30 to 40 jobs. She had interviews with about a dozen of them. I did notice that having research experience helps a lot, she said. She also interned at Tesla. The 22-year-old landed at Scale AI, but turned down some tempting offers, including from a startup that offered a 1% stake in the company. Cyril Gorilla co-founded CTGT, a startup that makes safety and enterprise risk software designed to fix such problems as artificial intelligence hallucinations. Its investors include Google. He said the average age at his company is 21. Some of their employees' equity is now worth around $500,000. Gorilla, who himself is just 23, has been receiving inbound requests from younger and younger prospective employees, including a 16-year-old who already had a paper published at an AI conference. I definitely did not see that a few years ago, he said. Next, I would like to read an article for you from the opinion page of the Wall Street Journal. This was published on the 19th of August of this year. Work-life balance will keep you mediocre. This article was written by Emil Barr, and I will give you a spoiler alert here. This would not work for most of us. What if I told you that the notion of work-life balance is keeping a generation from reshaping the global economy? I'm 22 years old, and I have built 2 companies already that together are valued at more than $20 million. I have signed up my alma mater as a client, connected with billionaire mentors, and secured deferred admission to Stanford's MBA program. When people ask me how I did it, the answer isn't what they expect or even want to hear. I eliminated work-life balance entirely, and I just worked. When you front-load success early, you buy the luxury of choice for the rest of your life. Please remember, this article was written by a 22-year-old. Back to the article. In 2020, when I entered Miami University in Ohio, I calculated that I had roughly 1,460 days to build something meaningful before the real world demanded that I conform to a traditional career after graduation. That works out to 35,040 hours. Most students today subtract sleep, 8 hours a day, classes, 6 hours, and basic necessity, 2 hours a day, leaving them with 8 hours a day to spend on life. That would be entertainment, clubs, dating, hanging out with friends, and other activities that rarely move the needle on long-term goals. But I took a different approach and spent my time building a social media company from my dorm room. That business, Step Up Social, helped companies grow on TikTok and Instagram Reels. It hit $1 million a year in revenue in less than 2 years. During my first year working on Step Up Social, I averaged 3.5 hours of sleep a night and had about 12.5 hours every day to focus on business. The physical and mental toll was brutal, I admit. I gained 80 pounds, I lived on Red Bull, and struggled with anxiety. But this level of intensity was the only way to build a multi-million dollar company. My approach reflects a broader shift among successful young entrepreneurs. The traditional path, college, corporate career, 401k retirement, delivers diminishing returns. People rarely older than we are have disrupted entire industries. We understand that the window for building something meaningful is narrow, and the tools to do it are often already in our hands. Older generations call this pace unsustainable, of course, but I call it front-loading success. My peers who have made similar choices also are taking advantage of unlimited access to information, to global markets, and to productivity tools with the goals of making money and, crucially, creating options for ourselves. The median starting salary for U.S. college graduates is $55,000, which means earning your first million takes years. But if you optimize ruthlessly during your peak physical and cognitive years, you could achieve financial freedom by 30 and buy yourself choices for the rest of your life. Building wealth this way requires sacrifices, of course, that most people are not willing to make. Here's what that looked like for me. Outsource everything non-essential. I hired a cleaning lady, I subscribed to meal delivery services, and I cut out every task that could be done by someone else for less than what my time was worth, according to our business's hourly rates. When your company is generating thousands of dollars a day, spending $100 to skip grocery shopping is a no-brainer. Next, prune social networks. I filtered every social commitment through three questions. Would I rather be building my company or spending time on this? Will this relationship survive if I skip this event? And if not, is this someone I really need in my life? The isolation was painful, and some friendships did not survive. This approach may sound quite harsh, but it's about giving priority to the kind of relationships that can weather your ambitions, rather than those that require constant maintenance through surface-level social events. Next, optimize academic life. From the very start, I treated college life like a business decision. I gave priority to classes graded purely on exams rather than attendance, and I did my best to attend only if the subject matter was related to my business ventures or business interests. I steered clear of courses that banned laptops in the classroom because I couldn't be offline for 3 or 4 or more hours a day when my team and my clients needed me. Plus, it isn't 1999 anymore, and that kind of thinking won't get us anywhere. Next, adopt a zero-based calendar. Every commitment had to justify its place on my calendar, with social events, casual hangouts, and even family gatherings weighed against business priorities. I constantly felt guilty about missing important moments with loved ones, but ironically, the relationships that mattered the most grew stronger because the time I did spend with them was deeply intentional. And next, optimize transportation. This one is unconventional, I'll admit, but I've used helicopters to cut travel time between meetings. It may sound excessive to you until you calculate the opportunity cost. A 3-hour drive versus a 20-minute flight frees up extra hours for closing deals, for reviewing strategy, or for working with and mentoring my team. I'm not suggesting that everybody will eliminate work-life balance, but rather arguing that for ambitious young people who want to build wealth, traditional balance is a trap that will keep you comfortably mediocre. The path that I chose was painful. There is no sugarcoating the mental health struggles, the physical deterioration, or the social isolation that came along with this intensity. But in a winner-take-all economy, extreme efficiency during your peak physical and mental years becomes a baseline for building wealth that lasts a lifetime. I plan to become a billionaire by age 30. Then I will have the time and the resources to tackle problems close to my heart, like climate change, species extinction, and economic inequality. The formula is simple. Sacrifices I make now are an investment in decades of choice later on. Mr. Barr, the author of this article, is founder of Step Up Social. He is managing partner of Candid Network, and he is a co-founder of Flash Pass. And I'll close with just a couple of thoughts about artificial intelligence. Nearly half of workers today believe that their artificial intelligence time savings should belong to them. And also, your prize for saving time at work with artificial intelligence could just be more work for you. This is all the time that we have for our program on careers for today. I hope you've enjoyed listening in and will enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you for listening in. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader, and you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.